You're listening to the 17th episode of The Gearheart. I'm your reader, writer, and host, Alex White. Renee White is the voice of our female characters. Read any good books lately? If you're like me, your reading time is limited only to the books that were recommended to you. That's where Shelf Life Books comes in. Why not get a trusted source to help pare down the mess before you make your next purchase? For the best reviews in historical fiction, literary fiction, nonfiction, and theology, visit shelflifebooks.blogspot.com. If you haven't had a chance yet or you're listening on iTunes, you can stop by the Gearheart blog and interact at www.thegearheart.com, or you can email me directly at alex@thegearheart.com. Don't forget that you can also follow us on Twitter, username TheGearheart. And now, settle in, pour a cup of tea, and enjoy as we bring you more tales of the Gearheart. Last time, on the Gearheart, Jonathan's powerful vision strike him once more, forewarning of the violent death of Agent Maeve Manners. Cog dreams of the final battle at Slade's castle, and remembers the pain inflicted upon her by her own father. Will Jonathan be able to save Agent Manners and learn her part in this grand scheme? Find out on the Gearheart. When Cog awoke from her slumber, she found Augustus staring down at her, making adjustments to her insides. For such a young man, his expression was that of an old professional. "Oh," he said, noticing her glance. "Morning."
"Hail to you as well, Augustus,"
Cog replied, somewhat distracted by her most recent dream.
"Would you mind giving me some clothes?"
"Not at all," Augustus replied, shutting the panel on Cog's chest cavity and pulling a sheet over her. He quickly fetched her old outfit and passed it to her. He then spun on his heel and faced the door.
"Thank you."
"You might want to take it slow, Cog. I had to recalibrate all your gyros after Jonathan wrecked your body."
"That wasn't Jonathan."
"It's okay, Cog," said Augustus. "You don't have to lie for him. I've spoken to Jonathan already." Augustus heard the heavy thump of Cog's hand slamming against a nearby table and suddenly became very nervous. Well, maybe that was... Augustus stammered.
"That wasn't me hitting the table, Augustus. That was just me catching myself after I tripped. These gyros really are different."
"I hope you don't mind, but I made some improvements while I was in there."
"Great."
Though Cog's tone didn't echo her words. "I made the gyros auto-orienting. In theory, you can now walk on your hands as easily as you can your feet."
"Oh,"
said Cog.
"How delightfully... strange."
"Well, that way, if Jonathan ever..."
"Augustus, enough. Jonathan did not do this. This is the work of Alden Slade, and you know that."
Augustus turned around just as Cog finished buttoning her shirt. "A man that Jonathan lets into this world."
"It's more of a burden than you might imagine, Agent Ellsworth. I was there the night that Alden performed the ritual of immortality. I know what the effects are, and I know how hard it is to resist the compulsion to give up control."
"Is that so?"
"Imagine that every time an opportunity came to exercise might, you felt like you had to take it. Imagine that every time things got hard, you could hand control of your life to someone else and trust that your problems would be fixed. And every time you give in, even a little bit, you lose a piece of yourself."
"Okay," said Augustus, but he didn't seem convinced.
"Now imagine that you join the Seekers, even though they have nothing to offer you, and that organization continues to place you in danger at every turn,"
Cog said, scowling,
"forcing you to accept the help that Slade offers from deep inside you."
Augustus turned bright red and clenched his fist. "We saved both of your lives, Cog. You should show some gratitude." Cog stood up and marched over to Augustus, straightening herself to her full height. She was marginally taller, but to Augustus that margin made all the difference.
"Gratitude and fealty are different animals, Agent Ellsworth. Jonathan was fool enough to join the lot of you, but I don't need your laws and rules. I have my own code.
Augustus grit his teeth and crossed his arms. Is that so? How about the fact that I fixed you just now?
Jonathan could have placed that amulet around my neck and I could have finished my own repairs. I'll admit that I need you, Augustus, especially after the first rebuilding you performed for me. However, I have yet to see any of you do anything for Jonathan except exploit his formidable powers.
Maybe Jonathan simply wants to help humanity.
How sentimental, coming from a man who just accused Initiate Andrews of irresponsibility.
Cog growled. Augustus attempted to say, but he couldn't come up with the rest of the sentence. Cog took the opportunity to finish the argument while Augustus stood stunned.
Jonathan's best friend lies dying and the fate of the world is on his shoulders. There's a man inside of him telling the poor boy that he can fix everything if Jonathan merely lets go.
Well,
I don't know anyone who could have lasted that long except Jonathan, and yet you continue to do nothing for him but slander his name.
Well, maybe I...
And one more thing,
said Cog with a stern face.
I haven't sworn fealty to the Seekers, but I have sworn it to Jonathan, and if you say one more thing to dishonor him in my presence, we'll settle this in a less civilized fashion.
Augustus hadn't realized it, but he was actually leaning as far backward as he could as Cog leaned over him. He could actually feel the energies gathering at Cog's fingertips, and his mind wandered away to all those stories of ancient duels. Cog was from the right time. A duel with her might end in death. The door flew open with a thunderous explosion of sound, and Augustus simply lost his balance, toppling to the floor with a yelp.
"What's going on in here?"
came Keegan's voice from over him. Keegan and Jonathan made their way into the room, clad in their overcoats. Through the opening in their coats, Augustus could make out the handguns strapped under their shoulders. Both men seemed fairly alarmed.
"Agent Ellsworth, Jonathan has just informed me that there's a situation below the city. We're going to need your guns," Keegan said rather brusquely.
Augustus climbed to his feet and brushed off his pant legs. Angry thoughts poured through his head. Why did everyone love Jonathan so much right now? It seemed ever more likely that Jonathan was the reason that Isabel was attacked. And what sort of firepower exactly was Initiate Andrews seeking? Harbinger Andrews, actually, Jonathan interjected, displaying his ring.
Oh, really? Asked Augustus.
Really.
My guns are in the lockup, actually, Augustus sighed.
Don't you have anything on you, Agent Ellsworth? Keegan inquired, checking his own sidearm.
Well, I have something that I was saving for Jonathan, Augustus replied, in case, you know, you went, you know. He then completed his sentence by adding a crazy motion with his fingers as he threw an awkward glance Jonathan's way. Jonathan grunted. I'm guessing that when you said saving it for me, you mean to use on me.
Right,
Augustus said, flushing.
Great, Jonathan exclaimed, clapping his hands together. Then it must be pretty good. Let's have it.
Augustus produced a single, marble-sized blue pearl from his pocket and passed it to Cog, who examined it in the light. Looking closer, Cog could see that it wasn't exactly a pearl, but a glass sphere filled with some sort of effervescing azure fluid. Cog reached into herself and opened her mind's eye, allowing her to see the subtle flow of power inside the orb. What she saw was a furious, fettered arcane storm of immense power.
What is this?
She breathed, carefully lowering it from the light.
It's distilled frost.
You're an idiot, said Jonathan.
I concur, said Keegan.
It's totally stable. I managed to pull it from a better source this time,
Augustus said, moving over to Cog and pointing at the features.
Look, it's completely shatterproof.
He deftly snatched the sphere from her hands and bounced it upon the ground. Everyone else jumped a bit as the item made a horrifying ringing noise, but managed to regain their composure. As the device topped its arc in front of Augustus, he grabbed it from the air with a self-satisfied smile.
All you have to do to activate it is channel in a little arcane energy, and then it's as fragile as a wine glass, said Augustus, beaming. How much did you get in there?
There's enough in here to turn the main ballroom into an ice skating rink.
Terrific, said Jonathan.
There's nothing that I enjoy more than testing a tiny killer blizzard on a deadly force mission, Gus.
With that, Jonathan pulled a holstered .45 autoloader from under his overcoat
and tossed it to Augustus. The silver-haired young man managed to catch the pistol, but dropped the pearl. There was a collective gasp as it struck the ground again, but Cog quickly seized it before it could bounce a second time.
"Who are we going to kill?"
she asked. "It's actually a protection detail, Cog. Agent Maeve Manners. Pretty girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, that sort of thing," said Jonathan. Augustus pursed his lips. "What's the chance of enemy contact?"
"According to Jonathan," said Keegan, 100%.
Silence fell over the room as Jonathan looked around expectantly. Cog finally broke the quiet.
"This is a good thing. It will give us a chance to pare down our enemy's numbers."
"Always looking on the bright side," Jonathan said with a warm smile in Cog's direction. "That's why I like you."
"Thank you."
Keegan stepped forward.
"You three are all we have time to muster, as Isabella's infirm and Darren needs to care for her at all times. If you're not ready, I understand how you feel, but the Seekers need you. The good news is that this is not a capture mission, and we know of the enemy presence. Once we ascertain the opposition's location, you are to fire upon them and not stop until they are dead. Cog, I can only assume that you wish to accompany us."
"Yes."
Keegan smirked.
"I can't quite fathom why you won't join the Seekers, dear girl."
"I'm afraid that's a conversation for another time, sir."
"Then let's all survive, shall we?"
The passages down to the secret docks were as serpentine and dank as any of the corridors from the Penny Dreadfuls Jonathan read as a child. It was hard for him not to imagine Caldavi's spies lying in wait for him at every turn, ready to plunge a dagger into his back the second he turned the corner. Jonathan shook the image out of his head by remembering that he was a semi-possessed oracle in an elite, magic secret society that was intent on changing the very social structure of the entire Earth. The idea didn't make much more sense to Jonathan, but he was determined to continue in that paradigm. Cog led the way, shortly followed by Jonathan and Augustus, and Keegan brought up the rear. Keegan had determined the marching order when they entered the tunnels, having them spread out when the passages widened. However, the team was fairly deep in palace territory, so there was little danger in these locations. Like Keegan, Jonathan was fairly certain that the attacker-to-be had made his way to the docks from the outside. The exterior tunnels were kept relatively free of guard, to decrease conspicuousness, but that also meant that an intruder with a penchant for swimming could slip into the palace fairly undetected. That was, of course, provided that the intruder could kill the agents guarding the docks, and survive the freezing cold water. As they drew closer, cold fear crept into Jonathan's gut. He assumed that they would be dealing with a shooter or a swordsman, but there was no way to be sure. What if their enemy was a magus? Worse still, there were a lot of delayed effects that could be accomplished with alchemy. Jonathan had first-hand experience with the wicked stuff, and he didn't place some sort of decapitating poison outside the realm of possibility. Cog's descendants had been alchemists, and they could cause a limb to rot off just by touching it. What if Maeve's death warrant was already signed? Keegan tapped Cog's shoulder and signaled her to stop as they neared a wide opening in the stairs.
"The big space just ahead is the docks," he whispered.
"What is your plan, then?"
said Cog.
Keegan crept past Cog to Jonathan and squatted next to him.
"Harbinger Andrews, you're on a mission for the Seeress, so you supersede me here. What do you want us to do?"
Jonathan's stomach fluttered. He hadn't expected to be giving orders. He decided to feel Keegan out for ideas.
"Well, sir, we're going to have to determine what we're dealing with. If it's just a man with a gun, that's one thing. But if it's something else..."
A man appeared below them with a flurry of footfalls and an angry snarl on his face. He was clad in a leather jacket, scarf, and khakis, but the most important thing to the group was that he was armed with an automatic rifle. He drew a bead on the group as he assumed a strong shooter's stance.
"Who goes there? This is a restricted area."
So he was an agent. There must have been others around, and Jonathan saw no reason to lie.
"I'm a harbinger of the Seeress, and you're all in grave danger," he whispered, displaying his harbinger's ring. "You need to get out of here, or you're all going to die right now."
"What? We'll do no such thing."
Four thunderclaps sounded through the cavernous area outside the stairs, deafening the group. A burning bolt tore through the man who stood below them on the stairs, sending his remains crashing into the wall and spraying it with blood. Rock dust poured out where the shot struck the stone, emptying a small crater onto the stairs. There were no screams, but Jonathan was reasonably sure that the other agents were dead from the other shots.
So it looks like we've got a shooter,
Jonathan said, but he couldn't quite hear his own voice.
What?
Keegan shouted. The rest of the group had reflexively begun to clean their ears from deafness. Jonathan uttered a string of obscenities, but he was reasonably certain that no one heard him.
How is the weather nowadays, Madam Cirrus?
The Lord Officiate asked the Cirrus with a chuckle.
You're not fooling anyone, Wallaby,
she replied calmly.
I saw you kill Vander Latchley.
Latchley's face distorted momentarily in anger, and the muscles twitched unnaturally. Once again, the businessman's grin crawled across his face, and he knelt down next to the Cirrus.
And why didn't you stop me if that's true?
Said Wallaby.
I wanted you and the other dogs to feel comfortable coming into the palace for scraps. You're never going to leave here alive.
Is that so, dear? Then perhaps I should get right down to business,
said the possessed man, rising to his full height. The Cirrus sucked in a breath as a tear streamed down her cheek.
Yes, perhaps you should, before my associates arrive.
Without another word, Wallaby thrust his boot into her face with a sickening crunch. The Cirrus's frail body shuddered momentarily, but then subsided. The last bit of breath bubbled from her lips, and she ceased moving.
That's for sending your damnable queensmen after the Barretts.
A sudden fury seized Wallaby, and he smashed his foot into her again. Over and over, his boot crashed against her corpse, further disfiguring her face.
I am!
He panted between strikes.
The Great!
He said as his boot dug deep.
Wallaby!
His boot struck her again.
You!
And again.
Will never!
And again.
Trick!
And again.
Me!
And with a final scream, he destroyed what remained of her head. In the deadened room, Wallaby began to laugh. It was only a little at first, but his cackling steadily grew, as though he'd only gotten the joke. As his laughter died, he surveyed the room, wiping the sweat from his brow.
You must have been bluffing, my dear.
He giggled, nudging her mangled remains with his boot.
Or you wouldn't be dead now.
Is that so?
Came a woman's voice from behind him. Wallaby didn't even have a chance to turn before hot lead poured through his body. Licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license. For more information, visit creativecommons.org.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Miskatonic University. Located in the serene New England woods near Arkham, Miskatonic University is the preeminent source of knowledge on things both eldritch and paranormal. But did you know about our other degree programs? You could get your degree in parapsychology, locksmithing, gun repair, business information systems, interior design, and arcane secrets. Call Miskatonic University today to learn what the future has in store for you. And by Betty Bernhardt's Witch Butchery Boutique. Got an itch to burn a witch? Perhaps your problems lie in the vampire realms. Visit Betty Bernhardt's Witch Butchery Boutique today for our steak and steak special. One for burning and one for stabbing. And don't forget to see our new Puritan-style Dunkatron 5000, complete with cup holders for added comfort and convenience. We have the ever-popular Texas Inferno Mesquite Steaks for that delicious barbecue, smell. Product demonstrations every Saturday night, while witch supplies last. Betty Bernhardt's Witch Butchery Boutique. Nobody burns better than Betty Bernhardt.